Welcome to America.
Right now, the American dream has turned into a nightmare.
We are African, and we happen to be in America. We're not American. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America. Our forefathers weren't the Pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us.
Welcome to America, the podcast that tells the true story of the United States, from the footsteps of the first colonists to the tragic fall of the Republic in the year 2024. Each week, we will read a chapter from the book by Rania Bint Mahdi, as translated from the Arabic, by me, Dylan Evans. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to take a moment to thank our lovely listeners. I'm really grateful to you for taking time to listen to Rania's version of US history. If you enjoy what you hear, there are a few ways you can support us and join the conversation. First off, make sure to hit that follow or subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. This way, you'll never miss an episode, and you'll always be the first to know when we drop new content. And we love hearing from you. Your reviews and feedback mean the world to us and help us improve the show. So take a quick moment to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're tuning in from. Tell us what you love, what you want more of, or even suggest topics that you'd like us to cover next. And hey, let's stay connected. Follow us on social media for behind-the-scenes content, sneak peeks of upcoming episodes, and maybe even some exclusive giveaways. You can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Real America. Right, that's all for now. Let's dive into today's episode. Thank you for being a part of the America tribe. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. America by Rania Hafiz. Translated from the Arabic by Dylan Evans. Preface. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Praise be to Allah, the Lord of all the worlds, the Compassionate, the All-Merciful, King of the Day of Judgment. It is you whom we worship, and it is you in whom we seek help. Guide us on the straight path, the path of those on whom you bestow your favours, not of those on whom you vent your anger, and of those who go astray. Now that I approach the end of my life in this world, to await in darkness that day when we shall all be raised from the dead to receive our final judgment, I have decided to commit to writing the story of America, so that the lessons of this tragic history may also guide those who come after me, unless, that is, the last hour should arrive before I die and render my words redundant. May Allah grant me the power to do justice to the history of these once great people, whose ruins we see occasionally rising from the sands. Like the remains of the people of Thamud, these ruins are a clear sign and reminder of the punishment that befell them due to their disobedience and arrogance. Unlike the people of Thamud, however, the nature of the test that Allah sent to the Amrikiyun long remained a matter of conjecture. What was their she-camel? What precisely was the command of Allah that they disobeyed, which disobedience led to their ultimate destruction? Did Allah send them a messenger whom they denied, just as the companions of Thamud turned away from the messengers he sent them? And how, indeed, did they perish? Was it a terrible shriek, like that which Allah sent upon the people of Thamud, and which caused them to shrivel up like the dry twig fragments of an animal pen? Or was it a storm of stones, like the calamity Allah sent to the people among whom Lot lived, and from which only Lot and his family were saved? Whatever the nature of the punishment that befell the Amrikiyun, leaving their dwellings deserted and their remains scattered, it is clear that they too used to carve houses from the mountains, for some of them are so high that their peaks can be seen dotted across the landscape, emerging here and there from the shifting dunes of the endless desert. They have been left as a reminder and a warning for future generations. The ruins of their dwellings and the remnants of their civilization stand as a lasting sign of the punishment that befell them, a testament to the consequences of arrogance, disobedience, and rejection of divine guidance. To the Amrikiyun, it must have seemed that the sun would shine forever. But every day is followed by a night, and the Dar al-Harb engulfed them. Were it not for the impregnable fortresses in which our forefathers sheltered, spread out like distant oases across a wasteland of heresy and unbelief, they too might have succumbed. But the light that the descendants of Ali passed on to them has, by the grace of Allah, been handed down to us in one continuous line, like men in underground caverns who pass a torch from one to another and so find their way through the darkness. And this light has, in recent years, revealed much of the history of the Amrikiyun, so that now we are in a better position to comprehend the events that led to their downfall. When I was merely a girl of 12, ignorant of the truth and unaware even of my own captivity, my father, Mahdi bin Zaidi, took me to see that strange statue whose great arm alone protrudes from the sands. "What is that?" I asked my father. "This was built by the deniers," he told me. "Their worldly power and wealth was of no use to them when Allah decided to punish them."
"You mean the people of Thamud?" I inquired, my curiosity aroused. "Was it they who built this strange monument?"
"No, my daughter. The people of Thamud lived in the land of Al-Hijr, which is far away from here. This monstrosity was built by other wrongdoers, even more sinful than those of Thamud."
"What were these wrongdoers called?"
"They went by many names, dear daughter. Some called them the people of Satan. Others called them simply the Amrikiyun."
"What happened to them? Were they too destroyed by a great earthquake, like the people of Thamud?"
"Oh no, it was much worse than that."
"Please tell me the story, Father, so that I may learn the lessons that this sign teaches."
"Very well. Bring me a cup of camel milk and I will tell you what I know." I poured a cup of camel milk from my father's saddlebag and gave it to him. The old man took a sip and wiped his mouth with the tip of his sleeve. Then he began his story. "A long time ago, a great city stood here. Some say it was the greatest city on earth, and there were many tall buildings that reached up into the very heavens. For many years it seemed that Allah had blessed the citizens, and the Amrikiyun ruled the whole world. But they forgot about Allah, and eventually they cared only about men's bodily needs and whims."
"Were they Muslims?"
"There were some Muslims who lived among them, but there were also Christians and Jews and also many polytheists. There were even some who claimed to worship no god at all. But they lied, for they worshipped gold and silver and worldly renown."
"Did Allah not send a messenger to warn them, as he sent the prophet Salih to warn the people of Thamud?"
"I'm sure he did, my girl, but his name is not recorded. Allah never destroys a wrongdoing people without first giving them a chance to repent."
"Did they do anything else wrong, apart from worshipping gods of gold and silver?"
"Yes, my dear girl, great indeed were their iniquities. They built huge temples to their gods where they burned fires that poisoned the air with noxious fumes. You can still find remnants of these temples if you travel far enough. They used these temples to practice alchemy and bend metal and cook up all sorts of filth. And if that was not enough, they practiced all sorts of vices, including fornication and usury. And they drank wine and ate pork and allowed their women to dress immodestly."
"No wonder Allah punished them," I exclaimed in horror. "Truly, they were an evil people." and their public squares were full of anger and rage and paranoia, and young men got hold of terrible weapons and slaughtered their classmates, and their kings lied and cheated. But why did the Amerikyun build this strange monument? What is the meaning of this great arm that rises from the sand? This arm, my daughter, is but the tip of a great statue, the rest of which lies buried under the sand. It was one of their chief idols. Her name was Libati. I have not heard that name before. Did the Amrikiyun think she was one of Allah's daughters, like Alat, Al-Uzza and Manat? Little is known about their religion. But some say they believed the goddess Libati had given them permission to indulge all their whims and desires, no matter how sinful or corrupt. It is no wonder that Allah destroyed them. But how did he do so, if not by means of an earthquake? Did he send a flood, as he did in the time of Noah? It is a long story, my dear girl. He sent floods to some parts of the earth, and storms to others. But how he destroyed the city of the Amrikiyun is still a mystery. The land you see around you used to be green and fertile, and there was no sand to be seen for 1,000 miles. But Allah sent a great drought, and dried up the land, and buried their filth in the dunes you see all around you. Did all the polytheists perish in this great calamity? Yes, daughter, all the polytheists, and all the Christians, and all the Jews. Only the Muslims were spared. That is why you will no longer find anyone upon the earth who does not revere Muhammad as Allah's messenger. For we now live in the last days. Each year, the world grows drier and hotter. That is why we must travel for many miles at a time with our camels before we find a watering hole. But we must remain steadfast in our faith, for the day of judgment is at hand. I lowered my eyes. All praise be to Allah, Lord of all the worlds, I whispered. Amin, replied my father. And he recited a few lines from a poem, the only one to have come down to us, he said, from the Amrikiyun. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair. Nothing beside remains round the decay of that colossal wreck, boundless and bare. The lone and level sands stretch far away. How I wish my father were still alive today and I could tell him all I have learned since then about the history of the Amrikiyun. I dedicate these words to his memory. I owe my understanding of the history of Amrika to a serendipitous discovery, shortly after my father's death, of a trove of documents housed in jars in a cave near the Salasalatun. My brother, Mohammed, and I were looking after our goats one day when we started throwing stones for fun. Then, after Mohammed had thrown a particularly large stone into the mouth of a cave, we heard the sound of something breaking. We decided to investigate and found that his stone had smashed a jar containing some books. These books were written in a strange language which took me many years to decipher, but with the help of my uncle, Abu Talib, the mysterious tomes gradually yielded up their secrets to me, and I was able to piece together some understanding of the little community that had, once upon a time, packed their library into alabaster jars and entrusted it to the hand of destiny. The members of this community called themselves the Asiya and seemed to have sought refuge in the caves of Salasalatun not long before the great calamity. The Asiya may have feared the destruction of their precious texts and hidden them for posterity. It is clear, from some of the books they left, that they had beliefs about an impending apocalypse or a future messianic era. They may have believed that the books they hid in the caves would have significance in a future eschatological event, and therefore left them there for that purpose. Indeed, they may have viewed these books as sacred or symbolic objects that were meant to be preserved in a sacred place. They may have believed that the books would remain hidden until such time as Allah decreed that they would be rediscovered. And perhaps they were right, for I cannot believe that these books fell into my hands so many years later purely by chance. I give thanks to Allah every day for sending me these signs, and for the dry climate and remote location of the caves that provided an ideal environment for preserving the books over the centuries. While most of the books in the library of the ASEAN were concerned with the history of the Amrikiyun, there were a few that recounted the history of another noble people, the Rum. It appears that these are the very same people of whom the noble book speaks in Surah Ar-Rum, where it speaks of their defeat and prophesies their forthcoming victory. The Rum have been defeated in the nearest land, but they, after their defeat, will overcome within 3 to 9 years. The books of the ASEAN tell the story of the Rum at a time long before the coming of the prophet Isa, when they were still polytheists. Nevertheless, even during this period of Jahiliya, it appears that there were, among the Rum, some Hunafa devoted to Allah, not associating anything with him. These wise men wrote important works of history in which they told how they overthrew a cruel tyrant and created a marvellous Jumhuriya that lasted for 500 years. The ASEAN seem to have been very interested in the reasons why the Jumhuriya al-Rumaniya eventually degenerated into an Imbraturiya, and the noble government of law, which had reigned for so long, gave way to a government of men. It appears that a general called Julius Caesar was able to seize power and replace the ancient system of elected rulers with a dynasty of princes. The history of the Jumhuriya al-Rumaniya must have held a particular fascination for the ASEAN, to judge by the quantity of books in their library that dealt with this subject. At first, this puzzled me, but as I gradually pieced together the story of Amrika, I came to understand why the ASEAN was so preoccupied with the history of the Rum, despite the great distance in time and space that separated these two noble peoples. There is a clear parallel between the history of the Jumhuriya al-Rumaniya and that of the Jumhuriya al-Amrikiya. Both began with the overthrow of tyrannical rule and ended with the rise of another tyrant. I suspect that the ASEAN were looking in the history of the Rum and the fall of their Jumhuriya for clues that might help them understand the fall of their own Jumhuriya, the tragic collapse of their political system, which the ASEAN lamented so greatly, seems to have occurred not long before they took refuge in the mountains, bringing with them the library that it was my great fortune to find. One can only imagine the sense of shock and disorientation they must have felt at this terrible cataclysm. I hope that reading the history of the Rum gave them some comfort and helped them to make some sense of the turbulent events that had prompted their flight to the mountains.
And that's a wrap for today's episode of Amrika. We hope you enjoyed diving into the real history of the United States with us. Before we sign off, I want to remind you to keep the conversation going. If you have thoughts, questions, or stories to share related to today's episode, we want to hear them. Drop us a line on social media or shoot us an email at dylan@amrikabook.com. And if you haven't already, don't forget to hit that follow or subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. This way, you won't miss a single episode, and you'll always be up to date with the latest discussions and interviews. Also, your reviews mean the world to us. If you enjoyed today's episode or any others, please take a moment to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Your feedback helps us grow and improve. And of course, a big thank you to all of our amazing listeners. Your support keeps us motivated to bring you engaging and thought-provoking content every week. And that's it for now. Until next time, remember to stay curious, stay inspired, and keep fighting for justice. We'll catch you in the next episode of Amrika. Stay tuned.